Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Want to thank all the subscribers for checking us out. Big hello to all of you all. Hopefully you've gotten inspired to give the series a rating. Leave a review, comment in the comment box wherever you're listening from right now. And if you're not a subscriber, it's a great time to hit that subscribe button with your preferred listening device. Go to wherever you get your podcast from, and we will deliver 3 episodes a week, a brand new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, straight to your ears. It is the best way to keep up with all of your favorite artists. Do it right now. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today I'm going to be talking with Vagabond. She is back with a brand new record. It is her second one, self-titled sophomore album, and it is quite different if you got attached to that first one. Gone is the guitar indie rock, and in is the, the synth sounds, the grooves, the dance beats, trip-hop moments, ethereal moments. It's all in here, and Leticia and I are going to talk about all of that. What drew her to this sound? How natural did it come? Why touring had such an impact on the style? And leaning into isolation, loneliness, in fact, I'll call it chosen isolation, that really starts to push it in this direction. We'll dissect all of that and hear the specifics behind songs like In a Bind and Water Me Down, and the song Flood, which has ties to a Tegan and Sarah project that she was presented with, and even an upcoming new song called The Wild Wild that was written specifically for the movie The Turning, a movie starring Finn Wolfhard, who we've had on the show a couple times before, which once again finds Vagabond going in a different direction. It's going to be a surprising direction that I'm going to let her tell you about later on. It's also a really interesting story about if you did really get into her first record, Infinite Worlds. She'll tell you it was written about a person. Well, that person was apparently at one of her shows while on a tour stop in the middle of America. And you kind of wonder, well, what was that like? How did that go? We're going to hear that story as well. Let's get into this. It's the new self-titled record, Kyle Meredith with Vagabond.
Hi, Kyle.
This record, this self-titled record, your sophomore album, is one of my favorites of the year. I've been obsessed with it since it came out. It is so good. Thank you for making this music.
Thank you for saying that.
Let's start with the obvious stuff. This is different, yeah. And it's been well written about, yeah, and well talked about. It's different than the first record. What drew you to this type of sound?
Mostly a lack of access to my community that basically inspired the sound of my first record. So I was playing DIY spaces, warehouses, punk shows exclusively, and playing with punk bands, rock bands. So naturally, my music, whether I wrote it in my bedroom or not, took the shape of the space in which it was being performed in. And so that changed a lot after Infinite Worlds, and I was more in the van. I was no longer playing the warehouses. All of our venues, our DIY spaces closed down. And I just kind of started making more things on my computer due to the access.
Yeah, and writing on the road, that seems to be a case with a lot of artists, especially towards the second records. A lot of the records become, well, they had the danger, sometimes for better, but mm-hmm. a lot of times for worse, of being the road record.
Yes,
I don't know.
It's true.
Yeah, did you face that? Was there any of that point, like, you know, I still want to try to write where people can understand it, people that aren't, you know, looking at the yellow line the entire time?
I mean, I definitely thought about the sophomore slump that all my friends talk about, and I was definitely worried about that. But I also felt like, you know, with the little bit of success that I got from Infinite Worlds, I didn't necessarily want to just feel like I only had that bubble to exist in, because my interests kind of span across many different genres. And I felt like a second record was the perfect time to make a statement that I am not sure if I'm going to just make exclusively indie rock records. So I think that's part of the reason as well.
How natural did all of these various styles come then? Because that's hard for a lot of artists to kind of break out of that box. But it sounds easy when I hear the record.
Yeah. I mean, it is easy. I would say that indie rock was maybe more of a found inspiration, whereas like beats and R&B melodies, that's something I've been listening to in my music since moving to the US. So both are really, really prominent in my life. I love punk music, I love rock music, and I love hip hop and rap and just singing and songs and pop songs. So it came pretty easily to me, and I was just hoping I didn't lose everyone in the process.
Well, I find it's part of the bigger conversation right now, especially with artists who are, let's say, under 30 years old or so, whatever that line is and everything, that genre is no longer a thing, and it hasn't been for a few years. But it seems like you sort of have to fight against an old guard who also might be listening.
Right, definitely. I mean, I'm certainly wondering. I have asked myself, like, is it better to kind of have this predictable sound, or is it better to be experimental? And I just need to kind of make whatever I felt really proud of, because if the sophomore slump, like, thing that everyone kept telling me about was real, I wanted to make sure if I did flop, I flopped on something I believed in.
By the way, you did it. You exceeded. You went again. I would not call this a slump at all. In fact, I liked your first record. I love this record. That's one personal opinion, so for whatever that's worth. Yeah. You know, what's interesting to me about especially these two, not just the sounds, but from what I understand, I mean, those songs on, you know, Infinite Worlds, those were the very first songs that you basically ever wrote in full. And it's sort of mind-blowing to hear how much farther these songs are, considering how close they were to your own beginnings. What do you attribute that to, if you can pinpoint it?
I am an extremely fast learner. I'm a student just naturally. It's a part of my characteristic. I went to engineering school. I had a double major. I taught myself how to be good at math and science. And so being able to get better fast, it's something that I'm pretty accustomed to in my life. So I just kind of had that vision of this record being what's the word? It's a showcase of just kind of how much practice I've been getting since Infinite Worlds, whether it be through tour or my own new rituals.
I will say, and again, a personal opinion here, that there's sort of a connection to the first album, maybe a jumping off point in one of the songs, which it looks like a French word, and I don't want to butcher it.
Malalaise.
Malalaise. If I feel like that would be the jumping off point if one wanted to make that connection between these two records.
Definitely, and that was definitely thought of when I put Malalaise on that very guitar-driven album.
I mean, it gave you a future if you needed that road.
Right. It was less about people even liking it or it being a track that people return to, and more about just keep an open mind about what's to come next.
Is that French? Did I have that right?
Yes, it is French. Yeah.
Now, I know you're multilingual in that way. Do you ever write in French beyond that? Do you ever consider writing that sort of that album, those songs?
I have written in French. Nothing has made it to an album. I feel like if I wrote songs in French, it would sound very retro, like big band music.
Awesome.
Maybe I'll do one day.
I mean, I would listen to that. Why not?
Yeah.
That's something else, you know? Lay it on.
Yeah, I could try that one day.
Yeah. With, I'll pinpoint one on here too, on the new record. Within a Bind, it has all of these really beautiful layers, and they kind of sneak up on the listener as it progresses, as it goes further. When you have a song like that, and maybe specifically this song, is that something that you hear fully realized, or when you're doing that, does it build up as you go, as you're writing, as you're constructing?
That song in particular was the toughest song to arrange on the album. Originally, I recorded it with a string section, so it was the song where it was guitar and strings. And then it didn't feel right like 2 weeks later, and so I scrapped all the strings. And then I knew that I always wanted a choir in that song specifically, because that song is a lot of references to West Africa, West African music that I grew up listening to. And I really fought with it to figure out what it needed to sound really special. And at the end, I ended up just having a two-person choir, which was myself and a singer, Taylor Simone Harvey. And we just stacked all of these harmonies, mostly Taylor, in all these different registers, away from the mic, room mic, close-up mic, in the bathroom. We just did all these variations to simulate a choir, because I couldn't get a choir in the time that I wanted to have this album finished. So it's one where I experimented with a lot of different arrangements, and the one that ended up sticking, I feel really good about. And I really like searching for what the song needs. It's exciting.
It goes back to that old saying, necessity is the mother of invention. It sounds like that's what you were kind of dealt with this record.
Yes, exactly.
You'd mentioned, the multicultural thing, and we talked about it with the language too. Being an artist who has a multicultural background, these songs are saying lots of very personal things to you, the things that you're surrounded with. But do you ever feel like there are expectations thrown upon you because of your background, of what you need to say in a moment?
Sometimes. And I think it just, from being, active in the music industry for a few years now, I'm starting to realize that pressure does not really have anything to do with me. And besides, I put a ton of pressure on myself. That's actually how I was able to sound so different on this record. So I kind of don't, I try to just make sure that I'm level-headed in general, and that I'm standing up for what is important to me, but also feeling like I have the room to have a sense of self apart from where I'm from.
You talk a lot about isolation, and I feel like there's a sort of tie about loneliness in there as well. And I don't know, that goes back to writing on the road, I think, is the context. You've been talking about it in most interviews, but it's like, it sounds like a chosen isolation. Is that, am I far off?
No, it certainly is. When I was a kid, I was telling my friend this the other day, when I was a kid, if I did anything like that I think my parents would be like a little bit upset about, I would ground myself. But it was mostly so that I could just be alone. So I just like, it's definitely chosen isolation. It's how I recharge. It's how I feel inspired. It's how I have room to think and to do things and to find space inside of myself to make music. And so being on tour is kind of anti-writing an album, really, because there's none of that space. So it made for a very different thing.
Like it taking something that was constructed in that way and with that idea and then putting it very publicly in front of an audience, does that allow those moments to open up for you? Or are you able to kind of hold what it was?
Yeah, it does open it up for me. I think in my lyrics specifically, I'm often trying to find a way to normalize my feelings, whether it's a loner feeling or a complicated feeling. My lyrics specifically are very much like diary entries, and they're very personal. And in sharing them with people, I find a community of people who feel exactly the same way as me. And so then I feel less alone, even if they are all essentially strangers.
Yeah. I don't want this question to come off like I'm mining your personal life, but I'll bring up something you're talking about right there. You had tweeted that the person who broke your heart that you had written about so much on that first album came to your Milwaukee show. And you kind of left it open-ended, like, this is like, I wonder how this is going to go. And I sort of wondered if there was an ending to that story that that you're able to tell.
It would be something else if that person was hearing this. Like, it would be wild, because we have not spoken in maybe 5 years, you know, because of the shuffle of the show. And it's such a large room. And it was in Madison, actually, just like, I think over like 1,500 people or something. I didn't actually get to see them, but I know that they had a ticket, and I hope they saw it, and I hope I've been waiting for that moment for so long. An experience with someone drove me to start making music. And so while it was painful, it was also so rewarding, and it essentially pushed that pain and that hurt pushed me to write songs and to perform them and to create this life with my art in this way. And so I am both like, thank you, but also haha, you know.
Every songwriter, if you get to a certain point, has to go through something like that. If you write a song about a person that you're no longer with, there's that moment. Yeah. Will they ever hear it, and how will it be received?
Yes, I couldn't believe it. I waited 5 years for that. it felt like a sign of how far I've gotten. You know, I haven't been making music for very long. And before this, I was really just an academic without being involved in music or having music friends or friends in bands. And that's when this person knew me. So to have come as far as someone who's not plugged into necessarily the indie community to have heard anything close to me, it was just unreal. Yeah. I had to share it up and tell everyone, I guess.
Well, I hope whatever the outcome was gets back to you in somehow, because that's, you know, everybody wants at least some kind of closure on that. So it's
definitely.
I hope for you. I took it
as a win.
I'd love to ask about a couple songs before we get out of here too, and I'll just sort of broadly. Water Me Down is great. As a fan of trip hop, and this is about what you get 2019 version of trip hop to me, how I hear it. Yeah. Can you tell me about this song? What the story is?
Yeah. I was in New York City, and I was at my friend's house, and I had just gotten off the phone with a really irritating person. And I remember hanging up the phone and just like having all of the lyrics pour out of me. And so my friend and I, we often play music together, and he started playing this like synth line, bum 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 bum. I was like, whoa, it would be so cool. You know, I added that four to the floor, and we made it just like I love drums and I'm obsessed with them, and started just making this house beat along with that synth line he was playing. And I thought it was really funny, because for the first time, you know, something in my life was ending, and I didn't feel like the world was ending or that I was going to die. And so having it be on this those lyrics in this really like kind of groovy, upbeat, most upbeat vagabond song that exists, the beat of it and the lyrics being kind of this juxtaposition of one another, that was a really fun thing for me to explore. I wanted to create a playground with the production and with the lyrics, like heal myself through some heartache. And so how they blend together really ended up being much cooler than I thought it would be.
I love that you also ask publicly for any DJ to remix that song, because you're right, it is perfect to make a dance track out of.
Yes, I can't wait.
The song Flood, that's got a tie to Tegan and Sarah, right? Indirectly?
Yes, indirectly, yes. I toured with Tegan and Sarah. I can't remember what year. It must have been 2017. We did a few shows together, and we became really good friends, and I love them a lot. And so when they were working on the covers album, you know, the Con, they did like an anniversary album that was going to be covers of every song on the Con. Sarah asked me to do a cover of Floor Plan, and I really don't, I mean, I wing it with my music. Like, I didn't go to music school. I don't really know, like, music theory at all. I don't know any music theory. I just kind of make things up. And so when she asked me to do a cover Floor Plan, I listened to it, and I was like, how on earth am I going to, like, I don't know how to do covers. And so I was like, I think it's really interesting when people do a cover and it doesn't sound like the original. So I kind of was making this track that was very like electronic, like a little bit pop, but still had some guitar in it, and I didn't use any of the notes in there. Like, I just went rogue completely. Like, it was not a cover. I didn't even use many of the lyrics. And then I showed it to them, and they really loved it. But by that time, I really developed an attachment to that song, because it's the first time that I had produced something in its entirety, and it sounded like nothing I've ever made. It was an exciting point for what my next album could sound like, and they were like, you need to keep the song, and kind of echoed what I thought, which was that I needed to keep the song. And so that's how it ended up being Flood.
Here's something great for you that you can't have anymore. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Thanks for inspiring me to make something.
And I see that we've got one on the way, right, with The Wild, which was written specifically for the Turning movie.
Yes,
Much like the Tegan and Sarah, though, is this the first time you've written specifically for a project like this?
Yes, it is the first time. Yeah, I walked into the studio, Loris Rotham, who produced the soundtrack. I walked into his studio, and originally I thought we were just meeting and going to talk about it. And then he goes, "So, you ready to write?" And I'm like, "Oh God." I had just never written on the spot before, like in the studio and like writing and recording it right away. But that's what we did. 2.5 hours later, we're done with the song. And I had written the song, and I don't know how it happened, but it's such a fun exercise. I really, really enjoyed doing it. And I loved writing from the perspective of the characters in the movie, and getting to think so differently from how I usually write my lyrics. And it's more of like, you know, the theme song is more of, you know, leaning towards like 90s kind of like grunge rock like influences, and so it's also different than what my current record sounds like. But it was so fun to make, to like get back to playing guitars a lot.
Yeah, so you flip the script on the second record and immediately you're flipping that script again.
Sorry for the whiplash.
It's so great. In fact, I mean, it's been one of my favorite things about you. You know, what you're doing is so interesting. And again, and I'll wrap it up just with more compliments, because I am such a fan of your music, and I cannot wait to hear what comes after this.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really excited to work on the next one.
Yeah. All right, Leticia, it's been so great talking to you. Thank you so much for the call today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we'll see you out there. All right.
Yes, I'll see you out there.
All right, take care.
Bye.
All right, my huge thanks to Vagabond. The new self-titled record is out now. It is beautiful. Go check it out immediately, right now. And then, after that, head to WFPK.org. That's where you'll hear me Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me at any social media spots at Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I'm Lior Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.